back by popular demand. Nick Woolsey from Japan Remotely. They've been helping 2 years now, right?
3 years.
Three years. For the last 3 years, they've been very successfully helping people plan and then execute their move to Japan. So not a move to visit, but an actual relocation to Japan. And Nick is going to tackle a very difficult topic. Good luck with that. Thank you, Nick.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept that you'll soon be drenched to the bone. And if your time to you is worth saving, and you'd better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changing. Thank you, thank you. I've got your attention now, don't I? So things are changing. And as Ziv said, my business is to help the dreamers make moving to Japan possible. Who in here is thinking about moving to Japan? Most people, I think, are, oh, well, we've got a few over there. So making Japan home, not just a vacation, not just sometimes, but making Japan their home. And I give advice about how that can be done. There's a number of different paths. One of the paths that I've talked about a lot is starting a business in Japan and moving, oops, with that business. Let's see here. Oops. Oh, we want mirroring. Let's see here. So I've lived in Japan before. I was a salaryman in Japan for 10 years, was an English teacher, was working in IT, and it was hard work. And so the motivation for making this company was to do things in a different way, help people figure out how to move to Japan on their own terms. Now, as I mentioned, one of the best ways that I've talked about with people to move to Japan is by starting a business. And until now, it was a very simple and easy process. Basically, you needed an idea that you could execute, and you needed 5 million Japanese yen. And for your reference, those of you in dollars, 5 million Japanese yen is only about $30,000. So what I've had is people who are willing to take a bet on themselves, put down $30,000 into the business, and then build a business on top of that that they enjoy doing. People who are therapists, people who are short-term rental owners, people who want to start small travel companies doing boutique things. This type of thing is something that they could change their lives doing. Many of my clients had never been business owners before and ready to go out and do something new. Now, for those of you that don't know, because it's fairly recent news, in the last 2 months or so, some new regulations have been proposed and on the verge of passing, and considering yesterday's news, I have no doubt that they'll be fully implemented. The method for starting a business in Japan is going to get much more difficult. And the legal vehicle for starting a business in Japan is called the Business Manager Visa. And the business manager visa allows you to move to Japan full-time, 365 days of the year, and do essentially any type of business that you want. Could be real estate, could be something else, could be a combination of things. The major change that's happening is financial. So until now, like we just talked about, the financial requirement for getting this visa was 5 million Japanese yen. And from this month, oh man, I'm going to have to adjust the setting. Sorry, everybody. Let's see. There we go. From probably the end of this month, it's going to be 30 million Japanese yen, which is a 6x increase. And then the second line doesn't seem like a lot, but until now, the way it worked is that you could kind of choose your own adventure. You could have 5 million yen, or you could have 2 full-time employees. Going forward from next month, let's say, you're going to need to have both. You're going to need to have the 30 million yen in capital, and you're going to need to have at least one, ideally Japanese national employee, to do something for you, full-time. Full-time salaried benefits, the whole nine yards. Another interesting area that they're talking about adding, none of this is completely set in stone until they actually release it. I thought they'd have it last week, but it could be next week. They're also talking about an experience requirement, either 3 years of management experience that you can prove, or having an advanced degree such as an MBA. Another thing they're talking about doing is having the business plan that you have to start this business to be vetted by somebody like a Japanese CPA. Luckily, one thing that hasn't changed is the office requirements. You still need to have a physical office, but it hasn't expanded in any way. But when you look at the whole picture, you can see that it's going to be much more restricted about who can go down this path of moving to Japan through starting a business. So what does this mean for everybody in the room and everybody on the stream? How does entrepreneurship look like? Is it a viable path anymore? First and foremost, what we see is a financial barrier to entry. $30,000, and at least in the United States, that's about the price of a Toyota Corolla. Most families have a few cars, sell one of the cars, and you can start yourself a business in Japan. Now that it's 30 million yen, $200,000, that is an amount that most middle-class families around the world would have trouble coming up with themselves. It could be that there are, you know, more successful people or people who have funding to do a certain type of business. But as an individual, to just, you know, maybe do an early retirement and move to Japan and start fresh, that 200,000 or 30 million yen is a difficult amount for most people. The other challenging thing financially that we talked about is the one full-time employee. So there's no official minimum salary that I've heard about, but what my lawyers have told me is that it's better to have at least 3 million yen as their take-home salary. And of course, on top of that, you have taxes, social insurance. You can think about 15 to 20% on top of that, that you'll be paying out of pocket for that employee. And then you also have to remember that even before, you need to set your own salary to at least that level as well, because the government doesn't want you to live on the profits of the company. You need to set yourself a salary and have that as part of your P&L. So you've got your revenue, you take out your operating expenses, you take out your employee salary, you take out your salary, and what you're left with in the end is your profit. So with this financial barrier to entry, one change that I think is going to need to happen, and I think by design, is that small businesses are no longer really going to work for immigration purposes. If you're going to start a business as your primary method of moving to Japan, by design, it's going to need to be more medium-sized. For your reference, I looked this up with my friend ChatGPT, and apparently most Japanese companies have 10 million in capital or less. So since as new foreign business owners in Japan, you have to have three times that, that shows that it's a medium-sized business. And what I've done with my research as well is between your salary, the employee's salary, the overhead of the business, in terms of revenue, you're going to need to think more like about 10 million yen per year in revenue as a minimum. You can't have a micro business anymore because already just in salaries, you're hitting 6 million just in your salaries alone plus those expenses. Even if you have some e-commerce business with no others, it can quickly get to be much more than that 10 million you'll need to break even. And the experience requirements as well show us that this path to start a business is not as much intended for people changing their lives and doing something different. What it shows me is that the government is looking for experienced business owners to do a preferably similar venture in Japan, expand upon it. They don't want to see failing businesses in Japan. They want assurance that somebody is going to come and from this list create jobs and pay taxes on the profits through their experience as business owners. Lastly, there has been specific talks in the news about the Minpaku business and how it's a less desirable form of business than, you know, say, starting a very large one like a semiconductor factory or something like that. The Japanese government is looking for medium, large-sized businesses, not necessarily mom-and-pop shops. But what does that mean for people thinking of moving? It means that there is a necessity to have a bigger business now, but that's an also much larger risk. If you go to the casino and you spend $100 on the slot machines, that's one thing. If you go and spend $100,000 on the slot machines, that's a very large risk. And starting a business is risky. Most businesses will fail after 5 years. So if you're putting in your entire life savings, like many middle-class families would be doing this, you're really putting a lot on the line to make this move to Japan. So since this is a real estate conference, let's take a look at a very hypothetical P&L for starting an Akiya in Japan. So on the left side over here, we have the before, and on the right side here, we have the after the October changes. Until now, it's been possible to start a mom and pop business with that 5 million yen. You would put the 5 million yen in there. And as Ziv said yesterday, even if you're buying an Akiya, you know, 10 million is kind of, as we say in Japanese, giri giri, especially if we think about, you know, renovation and things like that. But for the purposes of easy math, I set it at 10. But really it could be 10, 15, even 20 million per unit. So let's assume that you buy two units. Conservatively, Let's say that those two units together with a occupancy rate of 40% would bring in a little under 5 million yen a year. If operating costs, maintenance, electricity, and water, and this can go up and down, as you know, and then you've got your salary here of the one director, yourself. Other expenses you'll encounter, there'll be lawyers, accountants, depending on how you structure your office space. You'll need physical office space. You could rent it out separately. It could be that you build it into the house. In this case, I didn't put any extra office space cost in there. But compared to your annual revenue, if you had two units, you'd be running a deficit of about 600,000 yen per year, or $4,000. So it's not that much of a deficit. I mean, I definitely know people that have, you know, this small scale type of business, and they do things like sponsorships on social media, events. One of my friends, and Ziv's friend, the Benton Homestead, they do agriculture and selling antiques and raising honey. So that's how some of these creators slash Akiya business owners have been getting up and kind of having a mixed revenue, but a very small business. Going forward, however, as you see in these red marks, everything is going to need to be bigger. First of all, the capital investment is now going to be 30 million yen. And I kind of worked backwards from here, actually. Because of the employee and director, I calculated that you needed about six units at 10 million yen apiece in order to comfortably break even. And I didn't put any factors like cost savings through scale. This could come down a little bit, especially here on the maintenance, electricity, and water. If you have like six units right next to each other, it wouldn't necessarily be linear. You could have some cost savings there. And then I put a similar occupancy rate of 40%. Having more units, of course, if you have more demand, it's better. And, you know, assuming linearly this way and having a little bit more for lawyers and accountants, for six units, I calculated a total expenses of 12.5 million yen. And so you'd come out with ahead $12,000. Let's think about this for a second. So you've put in 60 million yen and you get yourself a salary of 3 million yen yourself, and then profit of 1.9 million yen. That's a lot of money to be putting in to living in rural Japan. In dollars, what that means is that you've invested about $400,000 and coming away per year with about $30,000 that you can spend. Luckily, in one nice thing about doing this business in Japan, as we all, I think people interested in moving are excited about, the cost of living is much lower. So you could definitely live on this salary that you give yourself if you were in the Akiya business in rural Japan. But it's just now that this level of investment is so much higher, just the scale is going to need to be much bigger. So here are a few ideas I have about what potentially could be done in this situation. Going back a few slides, one interesting caveat that is interesting to me, it's to be determined yet, but it could be that they decide that there will be an or here for the full-time employee. I've seen that they have been thinking about if you possess a sufficient amount of Japanese language skill, they may forego that employee requirement. That's to be determined still, but if it's true, that's a big reason why this is so big here, because you've got to pay for that employee. And if you're paying an employee, you can't run out of money. So you need to have a more profitable business, because if you can't pay your employees, that's bad. And that kind of means bankruptcy kind of thing. So one of the tried and true methods of getting to Japan at first for many people has been going to language school. For somebody thinking about starting a business, it may not be the first thing you think about. But if you are going to be saving a lot of money on employee expenses, if this is going to happen, it might be worthwhile before you dump in 30 million yen to spend a couple of years at language school, getting up to the point where you could realistically live in that Inaka by yourself and, you know, maybe with a spouse, and avoid having to hire that full-time employee. Another possibility is you could do a different business besides a property business. If it's too much money upfront for you to, you know, have those six units, you could do something like start an e-commerce business or start some other service business. It doesn't have to be short-term rentals or long-term rentals. You could do something else. But if you've got your heart set on it, and it's a really cool business, I love the rental businesses, you could mix things together as well, like people are already doing with smaller businesses. But combining your ideas for the short-term rental with other opportunities that you see, and to have a larger mix of revenue streams coming into your business. So perhaps with that one full-time employee, maybe you give them another revenue-generating project, like, farming carrots. Like, all right, you're the employee now, you take care of guests, and you dig out the carrots for me and sell them. Figure out something to do with them that brings money into the company, potentially with a different revenue stream. Not everybody has ideas about what to do for a different business or how to diversify, though. Another possibility that we're going to talk about a little bit more later is buying a solution. It could be that you purchase a franchise, and our friend Ziv over there is the expert on franchise purchases with his other project, Nippon Bridge. It could be that even in as a separate venture or together with your real estate venture, you buy something that will bring in enough capital and potentially employees to satisfy those requirements. Later, I'm going to be talking with my friend Rudy in the audience about merger and acquisition as well at a smaller scale. What if you took that 30 million yen and put it into an existing business that is possible for you to run? There's several ideas. We'll go through it further. But the point is, you don't have to reinvent the wheel if you're not Steve Jobs. If you don't have the next greatest, biggest idea, there could be something out there that you could hit the easy button and buy and then run with it. This is how I moved to Japan. Getting a job, it is still possible. You could do something where you get a job. It could be that you have skills where you could find employment. You could even, as I did, be an English teacher. There are ways for you to invest in Japan while as a worker as well, if you've got the capital already. On a work visa, you could buy properties and then simply have them operated by a manager. When you're on a work visa, you're not allowed to have your own company in Japan or to be, you know, working for yourself, but you could put in the investment and have a property manager do things for you as well. One other option that I've been looking into a lot recently is also kind of a combination of getting a job and starting a business is finding a partner. If you've already have business operations outside of Japan and, you know, already have a business that's going, there are partners that exist in Japan that would be willing to have a B2B relationship and hire you as an employee. Those types of businesses would require that your business is real and that there's something for you to do in Japan with this business. But it could be a way for you to get that work visa certification. And then, you know, as a side project, like we talked about earlier, you could invest in properties and have somebody else run it for you. Yeah, 5 minutes. Thanks, Sib. So as I mentioned earlier, in just a few minutes, we're going to be out there in the breakout room, and probably you've already from this presentation be like, well, okay, Nick, so there's ideas for other companies to buy. And what do you mean by that? One of the things that my company, Japan Remotely, does is introduce people that want to move to Japan to parties inside Japan, like Nippon Tradings, Nippon Bridge. We've got a number of other partners, lawyers, realtors. And now today, I've just got a new great contact here at Kate Japan, and they are experts at merger and acquisition from especially towards the foreign audience. And in that breakout session, we're going to go through three examples of opportunities in Japan for M&A, including a ryokan purchase, where Rudy's going to talk about what it looked like when instead of starting a short-term rental from scratch, buying one that's already running. So definitely come visit us in the breakout session. Briefly, what Japan Remotely does, as we talked about, is we give relocation advice. We don't sell condos. We don't sell companies. I am your personal advisor about how this move to Japan is going to work. We talk about lifestyle. We talk about what kinds of business opportunities or career opportunities there could be, and then match the appropriate visa type for what you're doing. The way we conduct this business is we have a project called the Action Plan. And taking those topics, we'll have one-on-one calls. And at the end, I will write for you a detailed document that describes what the best path for you personally to move to Japan would be. And I'll have it reviewed by my team of external immigration lawyers and send you off on your merry way to the people that can help you. Another option, if you're still exploring, is I've just come out with an online platform called Japan Remotely Academy. And it's got a lot of the basic information if you're still looking at alternatives, ideas. Every month we add something new. I just had a great call, video call recorded with a recruiter from Globus University, which is a one-year MBA program here in Tokyo. And it was really fun. And I learned a lot about the visa benefits of doing a fairly low-cost MBA program in Japan. So I made it before my 5 minutes. That is the presentation. And I'm ready for your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Get your hands in the audience. There's Robert. Before I hand off with Robert, somebody was asking in the stream, is it possible to start a business while they're here on a student visa studying Japanese?
Yes, with caveats. It is possible for you to start researching a business, coming up with the concept, finding partners, the ideas. As a student, you must not get revenue from that business yet, and you must not establish a company in Japan. that is, you know, the main difference. As a student, you know, get together with your classmates and your colleagues and bounce ideas around. And then when you're getting close to graduation, I think one of the best vehicles now that has more meaning is the startup visa. If you've got that idea as a student and have some people that can help you before graduation, apply for that startup visa with your idea and see what happens. Briefly, what the startup visa is, for those that don't know, is it essentially takes, with the business manager visa, there's several requirements, like we talked about, the capital, the office, the employees, and the business idea. With the startup visa, all you need to have is the business idea. And so that gives you 2 years of runway to figure something out. So for students, for others that are thinking about getting a fresh start, a startup visa could be an option. Now, it can't, the problem with the startup visa is it has to be more startup-y, usually a tech or biotech or something that you would see in, on the TV show Silicon Valley, not necessarily starting at the BNB. There are areas that will do it, especially in rural areas. Check out the Omishima Island. What's that town called? Yeah, there's a few rural places in Japan that will accept that business model. But yeah, if you're in college with a bunch of other smart people, put something together and apply for the startup visa towards graduation.
Nick, people were asking if you can put your contact details on the screen again. I switched off.
Contact details here. My company name is called Japan Remotely. I'm on Instagram. That's japanremotely.com. If you want to get a hold of me, it's nick@japanremotely.com. Facebook as well, LinkedIn. Pretty easy to find. Nick Woolsey. If you're here in the audience, there's a limited number of cool stickers you can have. And, you know, come up and talk to me and we'll exchange business cards too. I've got my son in the back. We did a father-son trip. He's 8 years old and he's over there and he's repping a Japan Remotely t-shirt. So if you want a sticker, he's the guy to ask for the stickers. So... for those on the stream again, it's Japan Remotely and japanremotely.com. Oh, here we go. Yeah. As my son always says, like and subscribe. Questions?
Thanks very much for that presentation, Nick. Super helpful. And thanks for the lovely song at the beginning. I guess you get this question a lot, but what about people who already have the business management visa? Will they be segued into this new system, or are they safe with the previous requirements?
That is a good question. Nobody knows. What I've heard is that the new requirements will be set across the board for everybody. But what I've seen in the news that they've written, and we won't know until maybe next week or the week after for sure what will happen. But there's something written like, for those who are on the business manager visa, they won't immediately be required to meet the new requirements. There will be a case-by-case grace period. I think the most scary time is probably going to be when everybody renews. At those renewal, there is going to be increased risk of denial. So if you cannot meet those requirements, come up with why, come up with how you'll get to meet them. As we went back to the earlier slide, it's kind of scary because, let's see here. Yeah, 96% of current business manager visa holders are not qualifying under the new system because nobody was told that you had to put in 30 million yen into the business. everybody got this visa under the assumption that, you know, the terms and conditions would last for a very long time. It was very surprising how quickly things changed.
Before passing on to the next question, you mentioned the startup visa there as a much lighter way to get in. But then at the end of the startup visa, you're still expected to qualify for the business manager visa, right?
Yeah, so it has to be a good startup. Got to have some legs.
See, go ahead. Hi. So you mentioned that the on this slide you have having JLPTN2 or sufficient Japanese language abilities to, as a potential workaround for the full-time employee requirements. Do we know if sufficient Japanese language ability also applies to similar qualifications or certifications like the Business Japan? The BJT business or Yep, the, yeah. the BJT test or like
it
the,
was funny
the J1 of that?
They didn't even say JLPT. I put it up here just so people could understand. They said like B2 level Japanese, which is like the European system, I think. I'm not as familiar with that system. So I think it's going to be a case-by-case basis. But we won't know for sure until the actual final draft comes out sometime next week or the week after. We also don't know for sure if they're going to have this as an exception for the full-time employee, or if that means that if you have Japanese language ability, you still have to hire somebody, but they don't have to have Japanese language ability. So we don't know yet. We're all on pins and needles about that part, because like we talked about, to me, you know, the 30 million yen is a bummer. But as an amount to start a new business, a real business, I feel like it's not that high. I feel like the most financially painful thing to get to profitability is that employee. Because the Japanese government wants to see that you have a profitable business. And if you have double the headcount cost, it's harder to get there. But, you know, 30 million to have a brand new real medium-sized business, I think that's reasonable. But the employee part, that's tough. So if it's true, hit the Japanese books and see if you can avoid that.
Thank you.
Any more questions from the room? Was that a hand? Was that a hand, Daniel? No.
Hand,
yeah. Hi. Regarding the 3-year management requirement and or master's, do you have an idea how they quantify that? Because the master's is easy to quantify, you show up just paper, but 3 years management, is that like just have you hired staff in the past, or how does that even get quantified?
That's tough, yeah. I think that'll be subjective. One thing you can do with your application is put together a certificate of employment from your past jobs. And in there, detail what management activities that you had from X year to X year. You know, if you ran a company before, that's the best thing. Like if you're, you know, you had a company that you ran and then sold and then coming and doing something else, that's easy to prove. If you were the managing director, in Japanese it's Daihyo Torishimayaku, that's probably the easiest one. If you were a sales manager and your main thing that you did was sell things, I don't know. Yeah, it's, nobody knows. But that's why, you know, with Corey last week from Globus, we talked about, you know, potentially doing that 1-year MBA could not only help get you a job if you wanted one, but would for sure satisfy that requirement of the experience portion of the business manager visa.
All right, one final question, and then we'll call it a day. From the stream, do you have any feedback on the VC scene in Japan? Is it feasible for somebody to come here, set up a business, and seek investors?
And seek investors?
Venture capitalist investors, basically, VCs.
I'm not an expert in that, so
neither am I.
I'll take a pass. I just had dinner with one of my friends last night who does that. So hit me up at nick@japanremotely.com, and happy to introduce you to my friends who are more on the VC side.
Thank you very much, Nick. Please.